Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Penn Holderness. I promise.
It's Penn.
It's actually me. And this is the Holderness Family Podcast.
I have never seen my husband so interested in a podcast guest and the everything coming out of her mouth. But first, a few reminders.
Oh, yeah.
This week, on Thursday, April 11th, we'll be dropping the first episode of our ADHD bonus podcast series. And we're so excited to dive into more about ADHD. So be sure to tune in. That's Thursday. So a special twice a week drops for the next 3 weeks.
Also, you can learn more about getting a free chapter of our book, ADHD is Awesome, by going to ADHDisAwesomeBook.com.
And we're going to be doing some book signings around the country starting in May. So subscribe to our newsletter to find out where we will be. So that's theholdernessfamily.com/newsletter.
Hey, Kim.
Yes, Penn.
What three things are we going to learn today?
Hey, we are going to learn about 1,000 things about AI and how we should be using it. Okay. We're going to learn what AI is. And by the way, you're already using it, even if you say you're not. Number two, we're going to learn how this is going to impact the education of our children and how they can be using this. And also, finally, the biggest scams going right now. There's always something to be on the look for, but we got some great information. I just want to admit something.
Yeah.
We're talking about artificial intelligence. We're talking about AI. If you're a listener to this podcast, you know I am an anxious person. I worry about a lot. I get stressed out having to bring snacks to the tennis team. I get stressed about a lot of things. I am bizarrely not worried about AI taking over the world. Like, there's a lot of hills I'm going to die on. And I don't know what it is in me, but if there is a zombie apocalypse triggered by AI, take me first.
You've heard you say that.
I don't have the fight in me anymore. Like, there's just so many really important things to worry about on this planet right now. So if AI comes and takes over, just tell my story. I'll be out first. I'm tapping out. I think as a woman in the year of 2024, I'm more concerned about going for a run by myself or walking into a mall, maybe getting shot. I mean, like, those are the real things I worry about every day. I'm not worried about AI, but I am married to somebody who is really, really worried about what ChatGPT and artificial intelligence is doing right now.
I'm not worried about ChatGPT. I'm worried about some of the bigger picture stuff. First of all, I want to make this clear. I'm not a they took their jabs kind of guy. If AI finds a better way to do what I do, good on you. I'm going to find something else
progress,
that I'm going to do.
Right? I mean, horse and buggies used to be a thing.
That's not what this platform is. This platform is my understanding of math and exponents.
Okay.
And the fact that, and we're going to talk to Dr. Crompton. We have a very smart person who's coming on. And I am worried about the fact that the evolution of this particular tech in the last 2 years has been so exponential. And the definition of exponent is like how much time it takes for it to double. The time that it takes for AI to double is so much shorter than anything else. It's not like a population explosion or anything. And I don't know if systems are in place at this time to keep it from getting out of control. And there's an extreme side of that, which is the Matrix, with AI basically rebelling and then setting off a bunch of nuclear weapons that chars the sky, that limits solar power. There's a lot of fictional. That's extreme.
Yeah.
Here's what's not extreme. It's not regulated properly yet. Okay.
And Dr. Helen Crompton's talking to us about that.
But also, we like regulation. When was the last time we were able to regulate something globally? Right? I'm sorry. Like this, like these things, and I'm not alone. Charlie Behrens has given me permission to share some of his thoughts.
Charlie Behrens is a wonderful comedian. He's on tour right now. You've seen him in many of our videos as a collaborator. He's a genius, funny person. But he will occasionally call Penn Holderness here to
talk about AI.
To express concern over AI.
Yeah, and Charlie is very funny. He's also very smart.
Yes.
He and I are aligned on a couple of things. We're a little worried about the environmental impact of all the computing and the fact that, like, in order for computers like this to work, like, there's resources that are going to get drained. We are both really worried about this kind of like frog slowly boiling thing. Like, if are we aware enough of what it is that's happening around us, that the parable of like a frog going in water and it doesn't realize it's boiling until it's completely boiled. We're both really worried about where the power lies. It's billionaires that are not, and his point, I'm going to read what he said. He said, why are rich billionaires effectively allowed to dictate all of our future? We didn't elect them. How can we ensure the government will move at the speed of technology to address the worst of this?
And it's not.
Right. So Charlie and I talked about it. My son was getting a haircut from this really nice, perfectly normal guy. And I was like, what do you think of AI? His response was, I don't like it, man. And then he paused and he goes, I'm just hoping to leave the earth before it all takes over.
Here's the thing. I think you're going to listen to this conversation with Dr. Helen Crompton, and I think you're going to have a better appreciation for AI. I think you're going to be inspired by all of the ways in which it is making our world better through the diagnostics. It's going to prevent diseases. It's going to fill in the gaps of our education. But I also think she will teach us and reinforce the need for healthy skepticism about everything. And I think the healthy skepticism is something we need to learn, because so many people read something on the internet and assume it's true.
Yeah.
And so I think we just need to put those barriers in place.
I am sorry that, thank you, by the way, for being on your side for this, because you and I, our roles have flipped.
Yeah.
As you have just mentioned, I want to be wrong.
I know.
That's all I'm going to say. I want to believe in humanity to responsibly cultivate this unbelievably powerful tech that we have developed and has found ways to exponentially increase on its own. And so anyway, yes, I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Okay. Can I also freak you out in that I went into ChatGPT, and I typically work with the person conducting who we're going to be interviewing to get their bio so we can impress you with, you know, how impressive these people are, because she really is just industry leader on this. So let me read to you two different bios.
You're going to do both?
And then you're going to tell me which one is the best.
Okay, because I don't actually know. Do you want me to try to guess?
So, yes. Okay. So, one was written by a human.
Yep.
And one was written by ChatGPT.
Okay, I'm ready.
Dr. Helen Crompton is the executive director of the Research Institute for Digital Innovation and Learning at ODU Global, professor of instructional technology, and director of the Virtual Reality Lab at Old Dominion University. Dr. Crompton earned her PhD in Educational Technology and Mathematics Education from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Recognized for her outstanding contributions, Dr. Crompton has achieved a place on Stanford's esteemed list of top 2% of scientists worldwide. Her exceptional work in technology integration has garnered her numerous accolades, including the Chev Award for Outstanding Professor of Virginia. Dr. Crompton's expertise extends beyond academia, as she frequently serves as a consultant for various governments, bilateral and multilateral organizations, such as the United Nations and the World Bank, leveraging her knowledge and experience to drive meaningful change in the field of educational technology.
That one was very informative. Yeah.
Here's our next introduction. Dr. Helen Crompton is a renowned scholar and thought leader in the field of educational technology and AI integration. Dr. Helen Crompton holds a PhD in educational technology and has dedicated her career to researching how AI can revolutionize teaching and learning. With over two decades of experience in academia, she has published numerous articles and books on the intersection of AI and education. As an advocate for ethical AI practices, Dr. Crompton is passionate about ensuring that AI technologies are developed and deployed responsibly to benefit society. Her insights on the ethical implications of AI in education have shaped the way educators and policymakers approach technology integration in the classroom. Join us as we delve into the fascinating world of artificial intelligence with Dr. Helen Crompton as she shares her expertise, research, and vision for the future of AI in education.
Okay, so you wrote one, and then the other one was AI?
Yes.
Okay, I'm a little nervous here. Like, let me tell you what I really think.
Yeah.
The first one was a little more, like, listy and, like, felt more robotic. Just like it was kind of like you Googled someone. And the second one felt like that you actually, like, knew the person. And I liked the second one better. And I really hope that you wrote the second one. Please tell me you wrote the second one.
I wrote the first one.
Are you serious?
So AI,
it was like
AI had better language.
Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
It felt more human.
I agree.
How did it feel more human?
So here's the thing is that she sent, because she's wonderful.
Yeah.
She sent this very robust bio, and especially with everybody, every podcast guest, but especially with a badass woman,
yeah,
I want to put everything in there.
Of course,
because
you want to give them their titles. I understand.
You worked
that.
Hard. I'm going to put it. So I wrote it a little listy. So what this AI wants, so what she's going to teach us is how I could have taken that, the better language and that ChatGPT came up with, and I could have inserted her accolades into that, and then it would have been one amazing piece.
Okay, I can't wait for her to do that, because this has not made me feel better.
Okay. Welcome to the show, Dr. Helen Crompton.
Thank you very much for having me.
We are so excited, and we want to get your thoughts on AI and how it works and the very important role it's playing into our and our children's everyday lives. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got into this field of study.
Oh, I was in the UK working in the Greater Manchester area. And I worked at a school for children with severe behavioral problems. So they were excluded from about three other schools before they got to us. And so education and learning and things didn't mean a lot to them at that point. And so I was trying to find a hook, and technology was that hook. Mm-hmm. So then moving kind of, I spent a lot of time in as a classroom teacher, I worked pre-K through to 10 and teaching all those age ranges. Technology was a large focus as I was a coordinator. And I came over and I actually worked in the Chapel Hill Cowbridge City Schools district there. And I did a lot with technology. But I wanted to go into higher ed. It was kind of, okay, these technologies are great, but are they actually doing anything? I wanted to know what's happening. So I went into research into higher ed. And with that, I explored all sorts of technologies. 2016, 2017 in particular, the International Society for Technology and Education, they knew I'd done little bits in artificial intelligence, but they said, okay, can you develop a course for teachers all the way down to pre-K, focusing on how you can use artificial intelligence and how students can use it. So it was kind of okay. And I looked into that, developed the course, and I came out of it the other side, a very changed person. Oh, I've got to tell people artificial intelligence is going to change everything.
Oh,
and yeah, tell me, seen lately?
Yes.
So that was your first impression, right?
Your first awareness.
That was 2016. Yes. This is an exponential tech, right? So this is 8 years later. How has your opinion and impression of AI evolved since then?
Well, it's not moved as fast as the last couple of years because there was a lot of fear. So there was a lot less funding going out there, a lot less people as interested. Mm-hmm. And now it's becoming more commonplace that people are more accepting of it. So the progression wasn't huge, but I was seeing like generative AI. We actually, many of us used it and didn't realize many years ago. If we use those apps that kind of captured our face, yes, and then puts us onto a body that can actually dance.
Yeah, Jib Jab. Yeah.
Jib Jab was over 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's AI.
Yes, well, kind of, yeah, there Ish. Was that, and there was other ones as well that even did more. I mean, they could even replicate your whole body.
Deepfakes.
Moving different yeah. side.
And which then is make frightening. It like, that is frightening. I'm sorry.
And that was ages ago. That was a good few years ago. We were teaching teachers about generative AI 2019, okay. 2020, and saying, oh, look at these programs. These are great, helpful. But then, obviously, ChatGPT.
We will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Let's be honest, we've all had embarrassing BO moments. Like any time you have to speak in public, if you don't put deodorant on, Ooh. It's like a different type of sweat. Ugh. And you and I did like a thing and I got done and thank God I had a blazer on because it sort of masked it. But then I took it off and got in the car and it was just like,
there is a lot gross. Of pit sweat. Yeah. Fortunately, Lumi Whole Body Deodorant is making it so none of us ever have to worry about that BO again.
Unlike certain other DOs, Lumi is powered by mandelic acid to control odor in a new way.
Lumi delivers outrageous 72-hour odor control everywhere from your pits to your feet.
Lumi is a game-changing deodorant designed by an OBGYN.
Fast forward 6 years and her Whole Body Deo has now earned over 300,000 five-star reviews.
How? Well, unlike certain traditional deodorants that try to mask odor with a fragrance, Lumi is formulated to stop odor before it starts, more like a pre-odorant.
I personally love that Lumi is baking soda free and paraben free.
You can choose from a variety of fresh, bright scents like clean tangerine, lavender sage, or toasted coconut.
Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like mini body wash or deodorant wipes, and free shipping.
As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code HOLDERNESS at LumiDeodorant.com.
That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit Lumi Deodorant and use code HOLDERNESS.
And it's Lumi, L-U-M-E.
I read your intro via ChatGPT. We are already, to your point, using AI. So there, I know there's a lot of people that have this great fear and resistance. But isn't Google Translate, aren't we already using this?
We've all been using AI for years ago. When I used to talk about this, I'd say, what do we think of AI? Who's using AI? And you'd get a lot of people with their arms folded, mm-hmm. not me. And I'd say, well, are you using Google Search? Yeah. And everybody's using Google search, and that uses two AI, RankBrain and another one called BERT. And so people are using AI all the time, and the more obvious ones are things like Google Translate. So yes, there's a lot of people using it constantly for everything we do, even the Netflix recommendation systems. Where it appears easier, that's where how I describe it. When you've used a program and then it suddenly appears easier and better, mm-hmm. it's usually because AI is behind it. Yes, Ben.
He's raised his hand here.
He's raised his hand.
He's in class.
I've been an educator for years. I've influenced that persona.
Yes, class is in session.
Mrs. Crompton. Okay, can we back up a little bit and can you explain to people what AI is? My understanding is it is a machine that, at least from what I learned in like The Matrix and all these other movies, that gains not like full sentience, but at some point starts learning from its mistakes and teaches itself at this exponential rate that's faster than the human brain's version of learning. Is that like a more advanced version of AI, or is AI just anything that can do something by itself?
Okay, great question. So the way to think about AI is it does things similar to what we do. So perception, reasoning, how we're kind of using our senses to kind of think through things and how our brain works. So that's how it's working. Some of it teaches itself. Some of it just is using what we've had, and it's very kind of basic in the way it's working. So there's a degree of AI, like any degree of technology. There's the basic through to the super advanced. But it's doing things similar to what you'd think a human would do.
I don't like it.
So this is where Penn and I greatly differ. And I see it as a tool we could use for progress. I also likely don't know enough about it. I think Penn, he reads science fiction. He has seen The Matrix probably too many times, and he does have this fear. Can I ask you, I know this is your field of study. I know you have a great understanding of its power. So I'm taking that, I'm just setting the scene there. Do you feel like his fears and the fears of others are warranted?
Absolutely.
Oh, crap. Yes.
I knew it.
You go ahead, Ben.
I just said I knew it. I can't. Well, I'm winding you up. Let's go.
So with AI and with every now person suddenly become aware of AI and the potential of what it can do, it's an extremely powerful tool. And with any powerful technology, it can be used for great harm and great good. I will say, when people say, oh, it's AI's fault, AI has done this, AI is spitting out incorrect information, these things.
Yeah.
We built it.
The human component.
Yeah, we built it.
Exactly. It's the human component that has all those flaws, because we are greatly flawed, greatly biased, often very wrong. So the technology is just doing what we ask it to do, but it's very powerful. So where it can do absolutely amazing things, nefarious bad people can get hold of it and do very negative things. Let me give you some super exciting examples. So an exciting example I read recently as well is research where we're trying to understand what sperm whales are saying to each other. They're talking to each other.
Yeah.
So think about these large language models. Language can be anything. I mean, there can be different languages. It could be any kind of pattern of things that's like a language.
Yeah.
So they're going to actually be able to tell us what these sperm whales are talking to each other.
Yeah. No,
I mean, I've got three dogs. I am desperate to find out what they're saying.
Right. See, that's exciting.
So that's super exciting. I mean, that is very interesting, but that kind of unlocks the potential of, wow, this can do great things. Also, there's been recent developments, and I'm saying recent, probably about 3 years ago, looking at programs such as ProtGPT, which is basically sorts out protein folding. Once you work out protein folding, it helps with diseases, crops, everything. So, I mean, it's massive. And scientists worked out it's taken probably about 50 years. Well, the AI program just was able to do it immediately. It looked at what information it had and filled in the rest. So we are looking at major changes in the next few years with advancements in cancer care, just everything. It's kind of the mind boggles how much.
So for every sperm whale conversation, every early diagnosis and farmers and crops and all of the good things that can happen, I have heard, I saw on the Today Show, a guy, somebody used his son's voice and it mimicked a phone call. And they've had people send videos that mimic. So what are the things that our listeners need to be just aware of as we go off into this brave new world?
Yes, absolutely. So digital literacy is the way we understand and kind of look at data and what there is and how we process this. What we need to do is have everybody, children, adults, all ages, to promote healthy skepticism of everything that we see.
Okay.
So we need to look, be careful of what we, I mean, think about the internet. Mm. You go on the internet and not everything is true. For any listener out there, for any listener out there that goes up for all the information and goes, oh, it's on the internet. It must be true.
No. Anybody can put anything on the internet. Just look at us.
That's it. And then we also have those emails that come through saying, oh, there's a really famous one, the scam that says, oh, we've got someone's money, benefit money, and we'd like you to pick this up.
Yes.
We're going to give you money.
Yes.
So there's all these scams, and then there's other ones from a friend, and you recognize the email. We just have to be very skeptical of everything, not just take everything immediately.
Yeah.
So the one you've heard about there is very true, and it's what's happening is it doesn't take long for AI to be able to replicate your accent, your voice exactly.
Mm.
So what can happen is a parent could be called, no, I'm sorry, child could be called and said, oh, is so-and-so there? And the child say, no, this isn't their number. 15 seconds, mm-hmm. It's probably getting even less now. And they've got the voice of the child.
Mm.
Then the parent can be called and said, okay, I need money urgently. I need my bank details. I need this quick. It's always an emergency.
Right.
I need it now. Can you give me over the phone? And that can have never very negative effects. However, we just have to use the digital literacy skills, such as, is that email from my friend? Is that email address my friend's email address? No, it's not from them. Is that phone number calling from my child, my friend? If not, it's probably not. So we just have to be more aware of these things because these things are already happening. I do have a recommendation.
Please.
So the recommendation, and I've told all my family this, my dad who's 84 in the UK, I've discussed with him, and we have a word.
Yeah.
The code word. And if there's an emergency happening and they're calling,
don't say it on this call because they're going to figure it out. I'm kidding?
No.
I'm not joking.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Sorry. Just don't
grandpa.
Say the code word.
Grandpa, calm down.
This
Let
is not grandpa.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we discuss and decide on the code word, and then you use the code word in the call.
So I actually talked to both of my parents about this because after I saw that news report, a very educated gentleman and his son called, he caught it before he gave the information, like he put the pieces together, but it was a very long drawn out, it was hours long back and forth. So I came up with the code word. And so both my parents have a code word because I can see both my parents would be very worried and confused. So I would probably need to tell our kids. Our kids just wouldn't even answer the phone if we were calling, but we should probably have a code word for them. Okay. Penn, you have questions.
Well, I think that you just mentioned healthy skepticism, and I think that was a good way to cover some of the issues like the good outweighing the risks with what we can see right now. I have what's called unhealthy skepticism, probably. But it's, I don't think it's based on anything irrational. My understanding of math and the fact that an exponential event is just looking at the time it takes for it to double. And we're concerned about population explosion in that way. Al Gore has talked about it. It's that, like, that's real. The time that it takes AI to double is so infinitesimally small in a lot of these things. Yes, it could potentially cure cancer. It could help create new genes. And like, I know gene therapies like was a huge part of what they were looking at with AI, right? But if this keeps going, we're going to go from having like a computer that was smarter than any person that ever lived to in a week having a computer that is smarter than the sum of all humans who have ever lived. At what point is this thing going to learn enough to realize that they don't need us? And are there systems in place? How do we know there are systems in place?
Explain to me what you think would happen. Okay, so Dr. Crompton, sure. Welcome to our marriage. So, okay, these computers get super smart and then they just log us out of our bank accounts and then they stop, light, stop. Is that what you think would happen? Or
yes, they control power grids. They control memory. They control this conversation we're having right now. They've learned over the last like 15 minutes of our conversation exactly what it looks like. And then they put all of the expected outcomes, a gajillion expected outcomes of what the question and answer is. And then all of a sudden, we're not even talking to her. We're talking to a deep fake of her. There's no way to trust anything on the internet. Once this happens, I'm just telling you, you talked about how much it's changed in the last 2 years, right? Then look at the 2 years before that and the 2 years before that. This could be coming sooner than we think. I'm sorry. I know I sound like a crazy person, yeah. But I bet you I'm not alone. I bet I'm not alone in feeling
this. Dr. Crompton, your turn.
Well, it's interesting you're talking about, what's happened in the last 2 years and then the 2 years before that. The 2 years before that wasn't that fast.
Yeah.
Now we're going to see it go fast.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
So much faster.
Yeah.
So, for example, OpenAI worked with Microsoft and got $1 billion to create ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. They've since got 10 to 13 billion, depending on what media outlet you're looking at, 10 to 13 billion to go forward. So we are at the very basic of this. However, am I seeing you shaking there, Ben?
No, I'm pointing to the base. I know that we're at the base.
Yes, we're right at the very beginning. So I watch the same programs as you. I watch Doctor Who and things where kind of the AI takes over. AI is all brain and no heart. What I mean by that, it's very intelligent. It's not got a heart. It doesn't know us. It also doesn't work the way we do. It doesn't think, I'm going to take over the world. It doesn't have thoughts like that for itself. It doesn't care whether it takes over the world or not. However, if we design programs to have it thinking this way, yes, things can happen. So what we need to do, and that's what everyone's rushing around with at the moment, is figuring out regulations and guidelines. Yes, we definitely need all those things. So what was interesting, I worked with the United Nations, and when people were saying, where's your regulations? Where are these things coming? And we couldn't do anything initially, because it was changing and people were working out so quickly that anything that was put out there would have been dated.
How can you guarantee that those regulations are going to be created responsibly when places like Microsoft and these billionaires have such power with this technology?
Yes, and also countries.
Yeah.
We could decide in a country what we're doing and another country could do something very different. So there's a great deal behind all this. I mean, the big one is obviously we're trying to have it so people have kind of a cutoff so it can't kind of get carried away by itself. But it should be doing what we're telling it to do, which is great. It's just you do have to be careful of people that are using it, like I said, for negative use. Now, there's a lot of people thinking, well, no, we need to get rid of it. It's like throwing a bucket of water onto the floor and saying, no, we want to take it back.
Yeah.
It's impossible. This is out there. But we just have to manage it well. And we have to get ahead of those that are doing the negative things to put safeguards and things like that in place. Even though people are doing negative things, don't want probably AI to take over and blow up the world. So it's kind of us learning along at the same time, and people are, there's so much invested in actually learning about this. But there's always that piece with technologies. We always have to be careful. Mm-hmm. This, we're doing it very quickly. It's like flying a plane while building it at the same time, putting the pieces in, because we've had to do that, because like ChatGPT came out and I wasn't even prepared for that.
I wanted to ask about what our kids and their, how it's being used in education, to kind of bring us back a little bit. But let's go to ChatGPT and talk to us. What is it exactly? And for, just to explain for people who might not be familiar.
Absolutely. So the way I describe ChatGPT is, it, if you think about using Google search, you go in, you ask a question, you ask for something, and it gives you a list of websites that'll probably have your answer that you're looking for. ChatGPT will give you the answer directly. So what it's doing is it's using, and I'm talking about ChatGPT, but this is the same as the other programs, Bard, that's now changed to Gemini, Perplexity, Claude, there's many out there. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is they're looking at all the information that they've been given, usually the information off the web, that it's bias and so on. So we have to just be aware of things. So it's taking all that information and giving it out in a new way. So the way to think about it is, if you talk to your child explaining like how to cross the road, simple things like that, when you ask your child, tell us about crossing the road, they won't use your exact language. They'll use the information that you've given them and they'll say it in their own language. They'll phrase it however they want to do. And that's a good way to think about how ChatGPT is doing. It's getting all the information and it's answering you using that information in their own words.
All of the information.
I just want to repeat something you said, which is there are filters on it. It's there is nuance and there is, it is subjective, because I have used it. My son was late to study for a world history exam last year. And this is when all this stuff was exploding. I downloaded one of those apps and he has a study guide. And it asked, or it said, be able to name the three, I don't even know, the civilizations and the tribes of the ancient Mayans. And I was Google searching to confirm what he had written, and I was not finding clear answers. I put it into ChatGPT, and it gives me an entire book report. It was wonderful and accurate. I then used it to search something else, and I found the information to be very skewed. So it does require human input, so therefore does need to be verified. Yes?
Yes. Yes, it is a great tool. Mm-hmm. And again, it's knowing how the tool works that makes it as successful users of the tool. So the tool doesn't always provide the right answer. Most of the time it does. Mm-hmm. But we have to, again, use that skepticism as in, oh, is that correct? Let me just check it a couple of other places, make sure I'm getting the right answer. But it provides amazing help to children.
Talk to us about, we have a lot of parents who listen to this podcast. How can we expect our kids to be using this in a way that's not plagiarism?
Yeah. What a lot of people want to know, and you brought up that it can be incredibly helpful. It just can't be cut and pasted, right? That's the biggest issue.
Yes, exactly. So it's kind of, where do I start on this? As an educator, I am so thrilled that we delve into kind of the negatives, what we've got to watch for. Those things are always going to happen. We've always got to be careful and kind of figure them out. However, the benefits to students, to children in general, especially with their education, is phenomenal. So some examples, and before parents kind of go, oh no, ChatGPT, it's cheating, I don't want to know. A lot of students are not using it when they really should, because it can help them so much. Like you said, with studying, kind of give me some practice questions, give me the answers to the questions. Have I done these right? Critique what I have here and tell me, how could I improve? I'm struggling with studying with my noisy brother. What can I do? Give me some study techniques. It can do so many things.
I heard one teacher say that this may lead to like the grading system and the kind of evaluation system being much more in-person testing and less homework, because that's really where like reports and things like that, that's where ChatGPT is the toughest to detect.
Yes, and it's interesting because a lot of people going, oh, we have to move away from technology. But no, not necessarily. Like I teach asynchronously, meaning that students are never actually with me physically in the environment. And I'm able to test on what they know by, I actually use ChatGPT. I'll say to them, write this paper, have ChatGPT write the paper, and I want you to go through and carefully critique, look for bias, look for alternative theories, just everything, critique everything it's done. Another way, I have three particular ways I like. The other one is have a debate with ChatGPT. And so they can go back and forth on a topic. I mean, that blows your mind in terms of education. I mean, it's like having a discussion with an expert, like, oh, I think it's this. Why would Shakespeare opt for a meat-free diet? You can have all sorts, and ChatGPT can take on the persona of whatever. Like, I'd like to talk to Einstein. I'd like you to be Einstein, and I'm going to interview you. And these are things we could never do before in education. And they're literally on the fly. You don't have to spend ages planning as a parent, as a teacher. And then the other one I give students is I have ChatGPT interview them for a position. So, I mean, think about students going for college. It's kind of, oh, I'd like you to interview me. I'm going to a college. I'd like you to ask me kind of 5 questions. Give me time to respond and respond to what I've said. And this is the university I'd like to go to. And it will interview you back and forth. And it looks like an actual transcript from an actual interview. So, I mean, think about this type of learning that we could never do before.
And my blood pressure's going down a little bit.
Yeah, well,
blood pressure's going down. This is better.
It is interesting for our children's school. My daughter's a junior in high school, and they're busy. She has a rigorous course load. The shifts they've made is in her AP literature class. All of the essays they used to assign them to go home, now they're written in class.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was talking about.
Yes,
yeah.
But okay. I think I asked both my kids how they're using it, and both of them said, we're not. My son's school, and my son's school, who prides itself on really being at the forefront, they did send an email out last year saying, we're looking into it. We know it's a tool. We want to use it responsibly. As of yet, they've not incorporated this. At what age do you feel like it's a good time to that teachers should be exposing students in the classroom to this technology?
And so that's important for parents to know that any of these generative AI, so let me think what we have. We've got ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, Gemini, mm-hmm. the bad one, all of these, you technically have to be 13 plus to use them with parental supervision. So it does kind of put the onus. For example, ChatGPT with OpenAI never let under 21s use the technologies. And then ChatGPT, they changed it to 13 and over with parental supervision. So they're putting
it's the onus on us.
Back on the parents to kind of...
Okay. You know,
back to the regulations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you for all of those benefits. That was useful to overhear. Sorry. This is just like, this is the crazy person over here. I feel like I'm trying not to be the guy like shouting from a mountaintop. If I assume that we're going to keep the systems in place and we're going to be responsible enough to regulate this thing so that it doesn't get completely out of control, that would be great. It does lead to some massive shifts in our global workspace and our global workforce, right? Like there's going to be some jobs that people aren't going to be able to do as well as AI pretty darn soon. And companies are going to realize, let's not bother. Are there any particular industries that should be the most concerned? And are there other emerging new industries that people should be thinking about, say, when they either need to choose a career or think about another one?
Yes, I'd like to start by answering this by telling you the moment I cried my eyes out when I was younger and they had on the TV the robots, and it was kind of, robots are going to take your job. I'm not going to have a job.
Yeah.
There's not going to be a future.
Auto manufacturing and whatnot, yeah.
This is always a concern, and what's happened, the research shows it, it's had actually the opposite effect. There's been more jobs than less jobs. So think about this differently. I travel a lot around the world talking about ChatGPT, and I get to hear what people are doing. And South Africa in particular really caught my eye. They were saying, okay, we often didn't have the resources. We'd have to go into these low-end jobs. And now it's completely changed. We're like opening our own business. What I can do now is I can say to ChatGPT, I've got this business idea. Help me create it. Help me write a business plan. Help me write a marketing plan, write blogs, design the website. And it's as if they've suddenly got this entourage of people that can help that they could never before afford. So thinking about that, they're opening their own businesses. A lot of AI is doing a lot of kind of basic things that really, do we want to be doing anyway?
It's as somebody who writes blogs, yes, but I will say this, there have been many blogs written by ChatGPT about us. They are hilarious. That you can tell they get published with no human oversight. So I do think there is a world where somebody, we have ChatGPT write something, but I feel as if the human touch is still needed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in the creative space, I think Penn has a very real concern. He's a musician. He writes music. We have had ChatGPT for fun. We published it. Write song lyrics. They were pretty terrible, but I'm assuming they're better now. It's been a year later.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Ben. So, Dr. Crompton, you'll forever have a job in this because this is what you do. Do you feel, Penn, do you feel like AI is going to take your job one day?
At this point, yeah, no, I do. But then I'll have a new job. I'll do something else. Like my job is fluid anyway. I make weird videos on the internet. And so can AI. I think that for me, and maybe for a lot of people like me, I'm longing for a more face-to-face personal connection in my career, because that's one thing that no matter how great AI is, I think we still need as people. And I think we're going to need it more than ever if this world turns into this potentially technologically super, maybe even an idyllic place where all of these problems are solved. I think that people are going to crave a more face-to-face connection. And I don't know how to solve that, but that might be the direction that I would want my career to go in.
Anyway, we could sit here this is your entire job that you get, you go all over the world talking about this. So obviously we could take hours with you, but we're going to be respectful of your time. But just bottom line this for us, in your opinion, does the good outweigh the risk?
Absolutely. That's the very short answer. Let me give you some things kind of to finish on as well. Just thinking, because I've only scratched on the surface of those positives that it can do.
Yeah.
From it can boost creativity, exploration, discovery. I mean, child says, oh, I like dinosaurs. You could go to ChatGPT saying, okay, give me a story told as the dinosaur as an author, and kind of tell me for a five-year-old. I mean, it's really personalizing education as well. Also, thinking about students that go home to wonderful parents, but they haven't had a strong education, mm-hmm. and they don't have extra money to send them off to tutors and things like that. These programs can work alongside the parent to support in helping those discussions. Like, how often do children go home and they show the parents the mathematics homework and the parents go, oh, okay, I'm making whatever, I'll see you later.
That's me.
So this is great that they don't have to. They can sit there and work with these programs and say, okay, give us step-by-step instructions how to do this. And then give us example of what it looks like in real-world examples. Why would we want to know this? I mean, it's limitless in what you have to ask. Think about the students going to college. Okay, I'd like to go to college. I'd like to go somewhere, North Carolina, Virginia area, and I'd like to look at game design. I'd like a college that focuses on diversity, all these things. And you can ask these programs to make a table showing you all sorts of information, the costs and everything, for things that you would have taken days, weeks to kind of find yourself. But it's there all, oh, I didn't think about that college. That's interesting. It's nice to know. Mm-hmm. So thinking about these things, that's important. Also thinking about how parents are modeling use to the students, to the children. Mm-hmm. Thinking, okay, let's use manners when we're talking about AI, talking to AI. There was a study a while ago looking at the use of Alexa.
Oh yeah, people love cussing out Alexa and Siri. Yeah. Hey Siri, you suck. Like it won't.
By the way, our phones are just like.
I know. Sorry, Siri. I didn't.
Siri, you're amazing.
Did you hear that? It just said that's not nice.
Siri, you're wonderful. We love you, Siri.
Siri, I'm sorry. I was just kidding.
That is hilarious. And even just basics in not being able to say please after you've asked for something. The research showed actually young children were mimicking what they heard the parents talking to Alexa to humans. So it's kind of what example are we giving? But we do need to tell them obviously as well what they're dealing with, because a lot of children go on to AI and this is a kind of a being that sounds very human and always listening. They might give too much information. So they've got to kind of be aware of all these things in educating children. This isn't a human.
Yeah, quick redirect there, because ChatGPT is text that shows up on your screen. I'm sure if they wanted to, like right now, it could be a person that looks however they want to with whatever they voice they want to, talking to you and responding to you. Like that tech is already there, correct?
Yes, and you can even do pictures. Many of these programs now, you could say to it, give me a picture of an elephant juggling teapots.
No, I understand that. I'm saying the entire interface could be a person.
But the person connecting. Yes, and they've already got programs that are like that now.
So that would, I would want to keep that away from a child.
But you can never do that. You're not protecting them by not educating them how to use it, because they will come across these things in the future. The good way to do it is to work with them, sit with them and say, oh, look, this just looks like a person, but it's not.
Yeah.
And so describing what we're horrified at now will just be commonplace in the future, but we'll have adapted and we'll know what's what, because we'll use a lot more digital literacy, that healthy skepticism about what we're seeing.
Yeah, well, I normally am I'm a very anxious person by nature. I worry about everything, but this, I'm like,
amazing.
I mean, as a woman who runs by herself, like I go run by myself on trail. That's probably what I'm more worried about. I'm worried about going to the mall and getting shot. I'm not worried about. I choose not to worry.
She for one welcomes our alien overlords.
I do. They're going to be great.
It is going to make our lives so much better, so much less disease. But it's going to do so much. I mean, I'm seeing the leaps and bounds that it's hard to explain to people. Just, wow, this is amazing. But we will have to regulate. It's just one of those things. And you will see some negative sides coming, but there's people all over this figuring that, we don't want to see these negative sides. And there are going to be things where we cut off the technologies. There'll be kind of like a cutoff switch. Oh, it's doing too much on its own.
Yeah.
Let's turn it off.
Long as we have full and total autonomy on that forever and have all of the fail-safe systems in place and that we don't use AI to create those fail-safe systems.
Yes.
That's like...
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I mean, people are ready for all this. The one just extra thing I will tell you just for a side note, the new big scam thing is phone calls where they get you say the word yes.
Okay, this is an important warning.
What happens is people will phone and they'll do anything to get you to say the word yes. Ooh. And that, again, has got your voice saying yes. And that could be used for many other things that we don't want it used for, like my credit card.
Consent.
Is this you? Yes. And I mean, the banking world and all these other people are very aware of this and they're dealing with it. But just last week, I had two phone calls. The last one, I picked up and there's kind of no noise. And I always say hello because I want it to start something. Because I'm interested sometimes to talk to AI. And what happens is there was, as I said, hello. And the other person, the AI, said, hello, can you hear me?
Oh.
And I didn't respond with a yes.
You could tell that it was a deepfake when you were listening to it?
No, not in the slightest. Okay. It sounded like a person.
Yeah.
But I realized they were asking me to say the word yes.
And so if we're getting those calls, we should just
not say that word.
It would be, I agree.
To be honest, I immediately put the phone down at that point. If it's a real person, they can call back and they'll say something different.
If I find out that it's AI and it's trying to make me say that word and it sounds like a real person, I don't just put the phone down. I freak out a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, there is also a place you can actually call, a federal line that will look into the number and so on to actually explore this further, because it's something obviously they're actively dealing with at the moment. But that's another one just to kind of be aware. And we're always going to have like email. We always have these fake things coming through, and we have to learn to be very literate, skeptic.
Right.
Is this true? Is it this person? And it's not a negative thing. It just should be something we do automatically. Yeah. We think, oh, is that correct?
Yeah.
It's called thinking. And as long as we've got that engaged, we should be good and just aware and thinking, critically thinking.
We have so much to talk to our children about. And I'm excited to hear all of the things that this can do. And I will enter it with a healthy skepticism, I promise, Penn.
I'm working on it. No, I am. So I appreciate everything that you've said. I think the thing that stuck the most to me was that it can never make decisions. And that needs to be a very powerful lobby, right? It needs to go across all countries, all businesses, all everything. And it makes me a little nervous that regulation is not in place. However, you have helped me a little bit with the understanding. I want to know more. Where can we find more non-AI information? I need written by a human. Where can I find written by a human, maybe you, some more information on this?
Okay, there's a lot out there if you want to Google me.
Yeah, you, because I believe that you're an actual person, even though your skin seems flawless and you haven't said,
and you have really good teeth.
Yeah, you have no vocal graffiti. It's possible that you're a bot, but at this point,
we're going with it.
I'm just going to trust that you're a human. Where can we find your stuff?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of interviews for parents and all sorts, so you can always Google me. Also, I lead the Research Institute for Digital Innovation in Learning. So if you go to the RIDL ODU Global website, we have a lot of research on there. But as well as the academic articles, we have white papers that puts things just very clearly. We've got one on ChatGPT, the benefits, as well as the misuses and limitations. And so you can go there. There's lots of nice graphics that kind of show you what to be aware of. So yes.
We will make sure to put all of that in the show notes of this podcast. Yep. Dr. Helen Crompton, thank you so much for
my pleasure
talking my husband off a ledge and getting me more excited about all of the uses. So thank you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Mom
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.